In our first year of marriage, I never wonder if God is great because we got through our first year of marriage. Because there was just so much fighting and so much conflict. And I remember feeling really guilty as a young husband because I thought, gosh, you know, everybody else seems like they have a great marriage and they never fight. And it seems like that's all we did was fight. Normal was fighting. Abnormal was the small amounts of peace that we got on occasion. And then after 3 decades of marriage, as I look back, and when I eventually became a marriage and family counselor, what I discovered is it wasn't odd at all that all relationships have conflict. And then it's about how do I get through the conflict? Who am I in the conflict? And it's the big idea this weekend. You can write your note. Conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. Conflict is inevitable. In all of our relationships, we're going to have conflict. It's inevitable, but combat, we choose that. In conflict, and here's the difference, conflict can be resolved. Conflict, there can be 2 winners. Conflict, there can be a victory for both. But combat, there's only 1 winner. In combat, something or someone usually pays a huge price. Someone loses something in combat. And the Bible says why it all happens. Look in your notes here. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but you don't get it. So you quarrel and you fight. I want something and I have to have it and they don't give it to me. Or they want something and they have to have it and they don't give it to me. And it causes a fight. It's inevitable. You can't eliminate it. Rick Blackman is an author, and he's studied couples and marriage. Look what he says. I always tell couples that you can't eliminate conflict. If you're looking for someone to help you get rid of conflict, I can't do that. What I can do is help you learn how to recover and how to repair conflict. It's a part of all of our lives. And I wanted to ask this question. Would you say you're more of a fighter or a peacekeeper? Because if you're a fighter, you probably know what it is to win, but then have that hollow feeling at the end, like, I don't know if it was really worth it, when you survey the relational carnage that you have left behind. And if you're a peacekeeper, you probably know what it's feel. You know, you give in to something, and then afterwards you're like, I'm bitter, and I regret that, and I'm holding a grudge because they got their way again. And that doesn't work. And then, of course, on top of it is we have all the differences that are between us that we come into the relationship. Clarice and I were so very, very different when we got married. And, of course, during the engagement when I met her, we were just in love. And all of her differences I just thought were cute. And they changed so quickly. I don't know if you know why you have conflict in your relationship. I finally discovered why I have conflict in my relationship. It's my wife. Source of the conflict. No, I'm just playing. It's because I want certain things because of who I am, and I have certain things, and they're different from what Clarice wants. And that's where the conflict begins. And we have tons of differences anyways that we bring in. Let me just give 4 differences, major differences. Gender, personality, background, and values, and just, you know, in this first one, gender, I mean, regardless of where you come from on this topic, I mean, it's pretty obvious there's big differences between men and women, the way we process and see the world. And, you know, women seem to be much more complex than men. I brought this kind of a graphic that shows it really good, the difference between men and women. I'll put it up there real quick. Take a look at that. Now, there's the man, 1 switch, that's all. And look at the woman, tons of knobs and dials and everything. And the difficulty is the woman knows where all those are connected and where all those go to and how they're supposed to be set and everything. And the guy's like a 1-switch being. But the girl is hoping that you can figure all of that out at all times. It's all sorts of connections that are going on. Women are amazing that way. They have their relationships connected to their mother and the rude thing that a co-worker said and knows exactly where the kids are and, oh, when's my hair appointment? Oh, that's right. And when am I going to get and the new cute pair of shoes that I'm going to get? And it's just all connected. And the guys are, you know, cavemen. They're just like hungry. You know, food, or, you know, just real simple. And this idea of gender causes us to process differently. Process very differently. Women can process on lots of different levels. And I know I'm speaking in generalities. So if you're a girl today and you think, well, that's not how I am, you know, well, good for you. But I mean, just like for the most part, generalities, you know, and girls process lots of different ways. You know, they did a study. This is interesting. They did a study at the University of Pennsylvania. Here's what they discovered, that men, when they're in a resting state, so they're watching videos or they're, you know, surfing the internet or they're watching TV, 70% of their brain is turned off. They only have 30% electrical energy is going on in their brain. That's all they've got. Women, when they're resting, are at 90% activity. Girls never turn off. Just always going and everything. That's why it's so dangerous to ask a woman, how was your day? Because she will tell you in painful, excruciating detail all the different things. And, you know, they got it all connected. And you ask a guy, this is a major course of conflict for Clarice and I. I come home and Clarice says, how was your day? What happened? And I said, nothing. And, of course, she's got 90% working. Well, of course, something had to happen. You know what? I can eliminate a lot of conflict for you right now. When your husband says nothing, he means nothing. There's nothing in there, man. He doesn't have it. You know, he's processed it already. He doesn't have anything to say. The poor dude's operating on 30%. That's all. And it can cause a lot of conflict because here's what happens. A girl thinks that you want to keep your distance from me. You don't want to talk to me. You don't want to be close to me. You don't want to share with me. And that's not it at all. He's just a doofus. He's got no brain power to connect with you. He's off now. He doesn't have anything to do with not wanting to be with you or loving you or want to connect with you. It doesn't have anything to do with that. Clarice and I have learned that you have to set up time. She has to give me a little bit of an opportunity. You know, I have to have some nothing time, and then I can ramp back up to some percentage of being that, you know. I mean, she's aware of everything. She's got it all connected, and she's so tuned into our relationship. And, you know, and I, like somewhere in the recesses of my mind, I know I'm married. I know I have a wife, you know, but it's not that way for her. And, of course, we process from different points, too. I mean, you like the same, mind blower to me. When I got married, I didn't realize this. It was a source of so much conflict. The exact same event could be coming up, and we processed it from completely different places, and it still happens. Her father was coming to visit a while back for a week. He's going to come in. He's going to stay at our house for 1 week, and I love him, and we all get along great. He's going to come for 1 week. Clarice is processing the entire time, and she wants to talk about, you know, what are we going to feed him? Her entire concern was like, what's going to be in the cupboards? And I'm like, you know what I was processing? How am I going to squeeze time out of my busy schedule to be with him? And she wants to talk about food and how we're going to get food and everything. I'm like, girl, he's a grown man. He'll figure out how to eat. You know, and she's like, We were a part of the same event, but what she wanted was so different than what I wanted, and it caused conflict simply because we were processing completely differently. Do you know that the key to resolving conflict is to respect one another's differences? Because for so long, I tried to get her to change. I was like, man, if I could just get you to be like me. You know, there'd be no conflict. She processed completely different than I did. The second one, personality. We come from, you know, someone's an introvert, someone's an extrovert. Someone likes to talk all the time, someone likes to listen all the time. You know, our personality is very, very different. And if you're an introverted person, listen, if you're married to an introvert, Don't keep trying to drag her out every Friday night to spend time with everybody because, you know, she's not like you. She may just want to stay home and spend time with you on Friday night. And she's an introverted person. And if you're super, super social and, you know, don't always tell them you can't ever go out with the boys. Like, social guys, they're animals. They're like little monkeys that have to hang out in the trees. I mean, they need a poker night. Guys, sometimes they need to be able to socialize without any girls around. You can't always be pulling it in, you know, wanting to watch, you know, Sleepless in Seattle or whatever that stupid movie is. It's been on so many times in my house. Can we watch it again? I'm like, Tom Hanks is like 90 now, man. He's not even alive hardly. Why do we keep watching this? Well, it took me a long time to realize it wasn't about the movie. She wanted to be with me. And girls, I don't want to hurt your feelings. You need to know, your husband, your boyfriend, they want to be with you, but at times, they'll need to be with other people. And it's not something that you have to take offense at. So is it personality changes and differences and background? Man, this was one for Clarissa and I. We come from such different backgrounds. She comes from a large family that's very close. And in her background, it's half Hawaiian, half Portuguese, huge, huge family. In her background, they saw money differently. They saw how they disciplined children differently. How they spent vacations was different than my family. I mean, our backgrounds were so completely different. I'll give you an example. In Clarissa's family, everyone loves to dance. They're all dancers, and they all like to dance. Even the men like to dance in public. The men! And so when we got married, Clarissa thought she was doing such this awesome thing by dragging me out on the dance floor. I come from a very white family. We have all the white people diseases. We can't jump, and we cannot dance. And I had to tell her, I said, Clarissa, I'm not your dad. I have self-respect. And of course, when she saw me dance for the first time, she understood. You go sit down over there. That's embarrassing, everyone. It's like, come from different backgrounds. Do you get any quarrels about that? You recognize you're taking vacations or you're spending your money or you're disciplining the children or you just come from a really different background than someone else. And maybe you have a friend. Their economics is nothing like your family. You know, you see teenagers like that. It's like one teenager gets a car. They come out on their 16th birthday. Wow, you got me a car. You know, the other person's 16 years old, and their parents are like, if we all save for the next 2 years, maybe when you go to college, we'll have some money to buy a very inexpensive. You know, it's very, very different. Come from way different backgrounds and cause all kinds. If you can't respect that, so I used to fight against it, or I would try to leverage it and say, you know, it's not fair that you put that stuff on me, that your family was this way. And I realized, here's the key. Can you blend it? Can you blend the differences? Can you respect their background? And can you request that they respect yours? Because if you can blend it, it becomes one beautiful background that you pull from and you relate from. Some of you are going to go through religious things with people because you're maybe not going to be as religious as someone else, and they come from a very religious background. And what kind of church do you go to? Oh, they have people with their guitar on fire breaking bricks. And you're like, whoa. It's like, you know, and it's going to, because it's not going to be their background. Sometimes people will ask me how they should dress when they come to Eastlake. I said, well, you should have clothes on, but other than that, I mean, do you mean you can wear a hat? Well, if it's a bad hair day, you should wear a hat. I mean, I don't know. It's just but other people come from religious backgrounds and certain ways of dressing, that's okay. It's not worth fighting over. This is a church for everyone, and different, that's the way we roll. But other places, other ways, it's just like, you know, it's not worth it. Our backgrounds can be blended. Now, this last one, values. This is, you know, Clarissa and I, we value very different things. So it doesn't matter what we're doing, you know. If we go on vacation, we value different things. We value different things when it came to raising our children. We're thinking about, you know, getting a house. We want to move out here. I listen to her, and I'm like, I don't like any of that. You know, it's like we go to a restaurant. We order different things. We value such different. You know, what matters to Clarice doesn't matter to me naturally. And I've noticed what matters to me doesn't matter to her naturally. We don't bring the same, we don't value the same things. And for years, I tried to get her to see that what I valued was really what was worth valuing. And her stuff, who'd want that? Who cares about that? And I didn't realize how attached our heart was to what we value. Here's an example. We can't clean the garage together, Clarice and I, unless we want to fight. Because here's my motto when it comes to cleaning anything, and especially the garage. When in doubt, throw it out. Here's Clarice's. You never know when you might need it. Do you see possibility for clashing? I hold up something and I look at it and go, I don't know what to ever do with this. She says, I'm going to throw this out. She's like, whoa, wait. You never know when we might need that. And I'm like, exactly, you never know. That's called doubt. Throw it out. And I can hear the bell ring for round one of the fight that's on the way. Because even cleaning the garage, it's simple. What do you think it was like to raise two boys? What do you think it was like to have our parents age? What do you think it was like to have my foster parents die young? What do you think it was like to pick colleges? You know, we bring a lot to the table in what we value, and if you just fight all the time, I want what I want, my way's better. Blend them. I'm so grateful for what Clarice has taught me about family. Because I come from a background where it was every man for themselves, every woman for themselves. I mean, it was survival, you know. Every day it was just survival, and that's what I lived in. And there was no time to try to construct family. And Clarice has blended that into me, what family means, what it means to have a family, what it means to have family around you. I've been so grateful to have that blended in, but I fought against it for a long time. I want it to be the way I'm comfortable, what I need. So we bring lots of differences in, but if we can blend them, we can resolve the conflict instead of combat, which is fight. I win, you win. Now here's four practical ways. We're talking about how to be happy, relationships, marriage. And number one, go to a neutral corner. A fool gives vent to his anger, but a wise person keeps himself under control. And one of the ways to do this, and I'm sad to say, this is one of the huge struggles for me in my marriage for many, many years and still can be. It was so difficult for me to see the wisdom in taking a time out. And this came very natural to Clarice, by the way. I mean, we'd start getting into something and the fight would begin and she'd say, Robin, listen, I just need to take a break. It's just going to get worse. And I'd be like, we'll take a break when I say we're taking a break. We need to talk this out. And I'd bring the scripture in all lame. The Bible says you don't go to sleep when you're mad. And she'd be like, well, you ain't sleeping for a month then, boy. Because, you know, and just, it just, and I just, you know why? Because I felt like, you know, she was dictating to me. She's telling me when we're going to fight, when we're not going to fight, and how we're going to fight, and everything. And I was like, no way, man. Because I hate to lose. I was like, we're not taking a break. And so it would get more and more escalated, and more and more escalated, and more and more escalated. And I could not see the wisdom at that time. That sometimes when you get so angry, you say things that you regret so much. That's when the low blows happen. That's when you say things that are difficult to repair. And I would push her and push her and push her, and I just couldn't get the wisdom that at some point you just have to retreat for a while and cool down. You have to create some space and let it simmer back down. So you can talk to each other. Now listen, it's only fair, though, if you're going to return and try to approach it again. Because you can't just say, I'm so done. I am so done with this. Done. Fine. Do it your way. Can't be that. Or it can be, I'm not even talking about it anymore. This is over. The discussion's, I said. And you just leave it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you go to a neutral corner. You go, well, you got to take some time. And then we will return and discuss this. Now, some of you go from 0 to 60 pretty quickly. Doesn't take much for you to need a neutral corner. And Clarissa and I have discovered this in our marriage, that there's some topics for her are very difficult to talk about. And some topics for me are very difficult to talk about. And we know if we're going to discuss that topic, try to set up for a win in the conversation. Because when I come home from 9 or 10 hours at work and she wants to want to talk about one of the topics that's difficult for me, I can't do that. You got to plan it. You got to say next Tuesday at 5 o'clock, you know, in a setting that is nice and calm, we're going to discuss this. Get ready. Pray. We're going to go at it. And in that time, if I go from 0 to 60 very quickly, you've got to let me back away. Because you have to resolve it. You have to be willing to talk about it, but a neutral corner. And I would press and press and press and press, and I just would not do that. And so many times, all couples have those times where things are said and you stomp out of the room and you really get your feelings hurt. And a lot of times it's because we're way past the line that where we should be, or no one does well. So go to a neutral corner. Number two, this is a great one, shut up. Starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam, so drop the matter before it And here's the thing, I gotta tell you this. I have had such a difficult time with this one because even when I would get, I don't know if you have anybody like this, but I always want the last word. I don't know what it is about getting the last word that makes me feel like a man. I don't know why that is. Even sometimes after I've done this first one well, so let's get a neutral corner, let's back off, baby. Let's get a little time. And you know, she's like, okay. And as she's leaving the room, I have to say, but we're going to talk about it later. You know, can I give you a rule of thumb? If you have to have the last word, it won't be. Because there's going to be a word coming back at you. And pretty soon it's on again. And I don't know what it is about not being able to shut up. You know, a lot of it is just sniping, all, you know, kind of open up a little bit. Clarice said to me a couple months ago, she said, I feel like you're always watching me and commenting on everything that I do. And so first, you know, I thought about that, and I thought, well, that's a, you know, I think I might be doing that. And I don't know what happened about it. I don't even know how it started. I'd just be watching her all the time, you know. And she'd put her coffee in the microwave and she'd leave it. You know, the coffee's still in the microwave from last Wednesday. I don't know if you knew that. It's still in there. And, you know, it's just always commenting to her and always saying this. Oh, where'd you get that new pair of pants? And by the way, you're 5 minutes late for work. And just a running commentary about her life all the time. Just always talking, talking, talking. It's like I never could let anything go. I just always had to comment on everything, and I've been really trying to work on that lately. You know, I was like, I don't have to mention everything. Girls, so what if he wants to watch NASCAR for 2 hours on the weekend with his big hairy hand in a bowl of Doritos? You have to comment on it. Guys, so what if she calls her mom every day, and they talk about the same stuff every day? It's like, so what? So what if he throws all his clothes and there's the hamper right there, and how does he make a pile right next to it? How do you miss that many times? Well, that happens. You know, who cares if she can never find her car keys and she's all over the house and you're running late and you've installed some hooks right by the microwave, hypothetically speaking, that she could have put her keys on every time? Who cares? You have to comment on it over and over and over and over and over and over again. Do you have to comment? There's an African proverb about a lion and a tiger, and they both approach a water hole at the same time. And the lion's like, this is my water. And the tiger's like, this is my water. I'll show you who the water is. And so they're circling, and they're just about ready to attack. And all of a sudden, they hear a screech. Like, and they look up, and there's some vultures circling. And in the proverb, they look at each other and decide, it's not worth it. Is it really worth blowing up another day off? Man, I have blown up so many days off. I look forward to this day off, and then I have to say something stupid, and I ruin the whole day. I have blown half of vacations. I've blown evenings, date nights. You plan and you plan and you plan to have a date night. It's great. You got the money saved. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have a date night. We don't even get to the restaurant, and I say something stupid in the car and wreck the whole date night. Don't sit there and act like you've never done it either. I see you looking at me. Wow, how could he do that? Yeah, right. Is it worth it? Here's the question to ask yourself. Is it worth fighting about? Or would it be better to just let it go and not say anything? And the third one. Reconsider your judgments. This is Jesus talking. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about the speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? Jesus is talking about being defensive. And I do want to tell you, sometimes I feel like my marriage is a court of law. I'm in a courtroom, and all I have to do is just prove that it's not my fault and everything will be better. That, like, if I could just... It's like it's so important to be blameless. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. You know, the little four-year-old girl that runs into the house from the backyard, Mommy, Mommy, Mommy. And Mom runs out, what's wrong? She goes, there's poop in my pants, and I didn't do it. It's like, it's silly, but I was thinking about this. I thought, I wonder how many times Clarice looks at me and goes, I smell something. I didn't do it. And it is silly. But it's so difficult. I don't want to be wrong. You know, based from my background, I guess, or something I went through, I don't know all the combination of, you know, stuff, but for some reason I fall into this trap to think if I can prove that I'm right, everything will be okay. It never is. And I get caught up in that. It causes a lot of fighting in our relationship. You know, pray for Clarice. She has to be married to someone like me because I bring it on. That's on me, that one. She doesn't live that way. I do. And I've just have been that way. It's always been very difficult for me, even as I've walked with Jesus, to not believe that I have to fight my way to where I want to get, because I am so afraid that if I don't get what I want, I'll never be happy. I'm preconditioned to fight for what I want. That's just where I stepped into Jesus. It's like, I got to fight to get it. I got to make sure nobody takes it from me. You know, no one's going to help me. I've got to do it myself. And that's just where I'm at. And I get into these situations where I get these judgments, and I'm going to, you know, and I don't know if you've ever had a boss that you don't get along with, or someone, you know, I got married, I got a job as a salesman in this computer store, and I had this boss who's really, you know, he's very difficult to get along with, you know. His name was Vern Berg, and he was older than me. The crazy thing about Vern, too, is he had no butt. I mean, he just was this, I don't know what it was about Vern, but he just had kind of like a concave butt, and, you know, which made it even weirder for him to be like, I'm Mr. Man, you know. It's like, get a butt, you know. So, but anyways, Vern, yeah, I don't even know where that came. But Vern was on me all the time. You're not doing this right. You're not doing that right. You're not doing this right. And just on me, in front of other people, embarrassing me. He's just always on me. You know, on me, all the time. See, because here's what I've noticed. When I live like this, because, like, you know, if you're going to, like, this right here, I can't see what's going on around me. I'm just, right, I'm ready, you know. And that's how I felt like I had to be with Vern. And you know, one day he said something to me out on the floor. And he turned around, he went into his office, his sliding glass, and I was just like, I'm like done with Mr. No Butt. I mean, this is over. You know, I was like really angry about it. I was like, I'm taking care of this right now. So I went into his, like I went, I'm going to slide the door open and I'm going into his office. And just as I took a hold of the door, I'm Christian, just as I took hold of the door, I heard the Lord say, don't do that. Don't do that. And I was just sliding the door back and he said, he's hurting. And so I just in a moment, it was different for me. I was trying to, what are you saying, God? And I came and I sat down with Vernie. He says, yeah, what do you want? And I said, hey, I don't know. There's something I'm doing as an employee here. And it's like I'm always frustrating you. And I don't want to be that. I don't want to put you through that anymore. And that's all I said. And Vern looks up. And his eyes are watering. And he has the awkward for two men. You know? And his eyes are watering. And he said, my wife and I are expecting our first child. And there's a lot of problems right now with the baby. In fact, my wife is on complete bed rest. And we're not sure what's going to happen. And I think I've been taking it out on you. And inside, I was like, I would have never in a million years caught that. You didn't look like someone that was afraid or scared or anything like that. But then I have to ask myself the question, how well do I really see when I go through life like this? How well do I see Clarice? And my kids and people that I work with, and you're like, when I go everywhere just like this, man, it's just like. And every guy in the room knows what I'm talking about because you've been in one and you know what it's like when every sense and everything. And I had completely judged him and misinterpreted the entire thing. And I'm not saying I should have caught that nuance. I am saying this. It never even occurred to me. Remember the story of the lion that has the thorn in its paw, and the lion is mean to everybody and growl and roar and everything. And one little mouse is going by and notices that the lion has a thorn in its paw. He thinks, huh, I wonder if that's what's happening. Maybe the lion's hurting. And he runs up and pulls the thorn out. And all of a sudden, the lion is a completely different lion. On that day, for Vern and I, the thorn came out. And the reason it happened, is the next point that we're going to talk about. It's a drop your guard. And I want you to hear what Mike Meeks, our lead pastor down in San Diego, has to say about this whole idea of dropping your guard. So check this out.
Everybody struggles. Everybody hurts. And some of you might be at a point in your relationship where you feel like it's hopeless, that you can't see how the stress and the conflict could be lowered and the idea of a lasting love just seems way out of reach. And I want you to know that I have great hope because I have seen some very jacked up marriages get healed. And it takes time. And it takes learning some new ways to be and to operate. And that's hard to change, but it's possible. I've seen it. I've seen it time and time again. And one of those steps is the hardest one on the list, number four. Drop your guard. Now, that's stupid to do in a fight. You get clocked. But it's essential. You see, with Carmen and I, we were blaming. I was blaming her. This is, you know, what she does and what she says. And she was blaming me. This is what he does and what he says. And we began to see that there was underlying issues. And so we tried to look at it as if we could discover the underlying issue and place it out here, and then we decided how to deal with that problem. We became a team dealing with the problem. And you see, if I win and she loses, we lose. Our team loses. If she wins and I lose, our team loses. So how could we find the win-win? How could we look at this differently? John Gottman said this, "Those who fight well, love well." And at some point in the conflict, one of you is going to have to make a move of tenderness and vulnerability toward the other and drop your guard. In an especially difficult season in my marriage, and on a really tough day in the middle of that season, Carmen and I were going after each other about something, and I don't even remember what it was, but at some point, something changed. Carmen dropped her guard. And she paused, and she looked right at me, and she said, "I feel like you don't need me." And I knew something different had just happened, because that wasn't what we were talking about. And so I thought about it. And I realized she's right. And I said, "I've spent my whole life making sure I don't need anyone. And I had a whole lot of reasons in my history to do that. I wasn't going to be dependent on anybody for good reason, but I had shut her out and kept her at a distance as a result." And so as we talked about that, and I explained, "You know, I think you're right, and here's why. And you know, when you say that, I think it sort of, it plays into some of my baggage. And I'm sorry I let that happen." And she said, "I'm sorry I do that." And we had a real exchange with our guard down. And we confessed and repented and forgave. And it was powerful. Ruth Graham said, "A good marriage is the union of two good forgivers." I think that's so true.
This next verse on your in your notes is one that I often read at weddings. "Husband, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her." It's such a great picture of what it is to drop our guards. But what it's really saying is that God was the first to drop his. Can you imagine what it must have been like for Jesus to come and be with us? I mean, talk about dropping your guard. God becomes a person so he can be with us. He's not asking us to do something on our own. And he's not asking you to try to be like him only. He's saying, "I've dropped my guard towards you. You don't have to earn anything with me. You don't have to impress me. There's no marker to hit." Jesus is saying, "I've dropped my guard towards you. The mercy is new every morning. I will forgive you. And I'll give you strength." Jesus is saying, I'm laying my life down and dropping my guard for you. All your hassles at work and in your relationships. And Jesus is saying, have you ever wondered why, of all the things God could have done, he planned a cross? I mean, is there anything more vulnerable? I mean, look, like this, like, what's the difference between this and here's Jesus? He drops his guard. And everything that's occurring in our relationships, it's not about attempting it on our own. It's about understanding that God has dropped his guard, and Jesus is more than willing to jump in the middle with us. Right in your notes, it's the bottom line. Invite Jesus into your relationship. And then this last scripture. May the God who gives endurance and encouragement give you a spirit of unity among yourselves as you follow Christ Jesus. And I want to show you a kind of like a visual of just how that looks. As, you know, the last thing today for visual people. Here's the key right here. Plug whatever you want in, but for us, husband and wife, it when you invite Jesus, God, to be a part of your relationship and you move towards him, look how close you get. It's understanding that as I'm moving towards Jesus and as Clarice is moving towards Jesus, that's where the unity happens. Look as it narrows, as it goes up the triangle, as two people are, because sometimes all I've got, I can't even move towards Clarice. You know, it's the times you can't even be in the same room with them. But I can always move towards him. And my wife can always move towards him. And as we do, we're able to resolve the conflicts, stay out of the combat. And I hope today you'll consider inviting Jesus in.